Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. SCOTUS tells cops that stealing's fine, just don't get greedy, okay? We've got that story, plus the Summer of Rage comes to the UK. But first, hey Intercept, something's very wrong with Reality Winner. This story via We Meant Well, an NSA document purporting to show Russian military hacker attempts to access a Florida company which makes voter registration software is sent anonymously to The Intercept. A low-level NSA contractor, the improbably named Reality Lee Winner, is arrested almost immediately. What's wrong with this picture? Who benefits, is the question to ask. Trump looks bad as another trickle of information comes out connecting something Russian to something 2016 election. The intelligence community looks like they're on to something. Basically, hours before ousted FBI Director James Comey testifies before Congress. The Intercept looks like it contributed to burning a source. What potential leaker is going to go to them in the future? If potential leakers are made to think twice, another win for the intelligence community. The FBI made the arrest right away, nearly simultaneous to the publication, with the formal charges coming barely an hour after The Intercept published. The bust is a sure thing, according to the very publicly released information. No Snowden hiding out in Russia this time. Intelligence community looks good again. More evidence is now in the public domain that the Russians are after our election process, and it seems as though the intelligence community has been right all along. James? Right all along?
Well, yeah, according to this super secret leak that The Intercept published, right? Okay, so what's going on here? Something that we should take into account is that The Intercept has responded to these allegations, the Justice Department allegations, and so we'll provide a link to that. Basically, the long story short is The Intercept is saying, this was provided to us anonymously, so we don't know who it was. We should be skeptical about the fact that they're saying this was Reality Winner, and we take this matter with the utmost seriousness. However, because of the continued investigation, we will make no further comment on it at this time. So they're not going to say anything more while this is going on. For more information on this, I will direct people to a very good article on Moon of Alabama, Do Not Trust the Intercept or How to Burn a Source, where they talk about this in some degree of detail. And it is pretty ridiculous what they did. They provided documents that they certainly were not obligated to provide directly to the government. So it not just copies of documents, not just taking the text of a document and putting it into a different format. No, literally taking the actual printout documents and sending the facsimiles of that to the government so that they could determine, what printer it came from and things like that. Because, of course, that technology exists. That sort of thing is embedded. That's exactly why journalists have to be very careful about what they show the government. And there's other interesting aspects of this. For example, the Intercept has been burned in the past by giving documents for the government to comment on before they publish them, and the government turning around and giving them to the AP, who then publish the scoop before The Intercept get a chance to publish it. A big no-no in the world of journalism, but The Intercept was furious at the time and said, that's it, we're never going to give the government more than 30 minutes to respond to anything that we're going to publish. In this case, they gave them 7 days. 7 days lead time on this story before they went to publish with it. And so that's why they were able to arrest this source, or the alleged source, pretty much simultaneously. Anyway, I think on the Intercept side of this, the incompetence theory actually sounds most plausible at this particular point. When you actually read about the Intercept and its history and what various people who have left in disgust from the organization say about it, they're basically all in unison with the fact that they are ridiculous penny counters and will go through every line of a journalist's expense report, but don't care at all about the actual journalism. That's what several people who have left The Intercept in anger have said. So it does sound like complete managerial incompetence, and it wouldn't surprise me if they were simply incompetent enough not to be able to protect their source in the most basic ways possible. On the government side of things, this does stink to high heaven, doesn't it? But wow, here's this inside source that leaks this thing, and it, oh, look, the Russians really were trying to hack us. Oh, please don't leak this information to a media source that seems alternative or independent, so people will probably believe it. And secondarily, they also get to arrest the leaker in order to send a message to all the other would-be leakers out there. Look what's going to happen if you try to do anything. I mean, it really is win-win-win-win-win for the government. So, I mean, this stinks to high heaven. And The Intercept is right in the middle of it. For people who need a refresher and a reminder about The Intercept, what it is, where it comes from, who's behind it, and what their real motives are, I will humbly suggest they check out my archives, where I did an eye-opener report on Secrets for Sale, the Omidyar Greenwald NSA connection. And it stinks. And where it stinks, where there's smoke, there's fire, and where it stinks, there's a pile of feces. So there you go.
I've basically seen people just essentially waiting for a reality winner to say, "I'm a patsy." But we'll have to wait and see for that. So that is just one of the many, many fairly massive stories swirling around the world. And James, you've got an open thread posted on Corber Report that covers, among other things, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Egypt, Bahrain, and more, cutting ties with Qatar. You've got Putin's interview with NBC, where he implies the U.S. deep state's fixing to false flag Russia. And the other one is one that I want to talk about here, and I've actually been talking about it a little bit on my morning shows this week, and that is Prime Minister May says internet must be regulated following London Bridge attack. And we take this briefly from the London Independent. New international agreements should be introduced to regulate the internet in light of the London Bridge terror attack, Theresa May has said. Prime Minister said introducing new rules for cyberspace would deprive the extremists of their safe spaces online, and that technology firms were not doing enough currently. Prime Minister made the comments outside Downing Street on Sunday morning in the aftermath of the van and knife attack that saw 7 people killed and dozens injured. This, of course, coming only days after the Manchester Arena attack. We cannot allow this ideology the safe space it needs to breed, yet that is precisely what the internet and the big companies that provide internet-based services provide, Ms. May said. We need to work with allied democratic governments to reach international agreements to regulate cyberspace to prevent the spread of extremist and terrorism planning. James, the UK seems like it's kind of teetering on the edge, and they're now days away from another round of selections. So what do you take with this?
Well, I'm going to have a lot more to say about the internet aspects of this and the internet crackdown that, of course, inevitably was coming anyway, and they've been talking about and preparing for, and this is a years-long process, really, and of course we saw the Snoopers Charter last year and other things, and they've still been talking about ramping that up, so I think this is just a good excuse for continuing to push that particular agenda that we know is coming, and I do have more to say on that in a GRTV video I'm working on as we speak. But on another note, I'm going to point people to a tweet from Miles Elliott at Miles of Truth on Twitter, who was talking about the facial recognition aspect of the policing in the UK that I think is probably going to receive a boost in the arm as a result of this type of, well, the terror hysteria, the paranoia that's going on right now. Basically, it's being reported that biometric automatic facial recognition systems used by British police have now resulted in their first arrest. Police in Cardiff, Wales claim to have made the arrest on 31st of May, but have provided very little information about it beyond the initial news release. This arrest is significant because, regardless of what the police claim, it clearly marks the shift from the testing of these systems to their operational deployment. In other words, the British public can expect these arrests to happen with increasing frequency for the foreseeable future. Yes, automatic facial recognition being added to the toolbox for the British police state, along with, well, guns, for example. That's an unusual concept for British police, not so unusual for Canadians or Americans, but police with guns is a... it would have been a shocking sight even a couple of years ago in the UK. Now it's becoming par for the course. And what was the overriding narrative in the immediate wake of this London incident was, oh, the police, they arrived in 2 minutes. They were so good. Oh, thank God the police have showed up with their guns and saved us all. What would we do without the police? So Britain is, I mean, the mask is, to the extent there was a mask at all, is coming off. The police state is showing its face and baring its teeth. The only question is if the British public are going to fall for it, and What they can do about it is another question as well. But let's see what happens, as you say, the British election, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, taking place later today, my time, since I'm on the other side of the dateline. By the time this gets posted, it will be June 8th. I believe that's election day, isn't it? So we're going to see if Theresa May survives this, and if so, whether that agenda that she's talked about with the internet crackdown and everything else is going to continue unbroken.
James, I heard, and it was on Saturday, I believe, I heard an indie British internet broadcaster on the air, kind of live in the aftermath of the bridge attack, and he was kind of trying to follow some news, but also just pretty much editorializing, basically go from saying, you stupid alternative media, you think that all these attacks and these terror events are meant to go after the internet. How insane. Then basically working himself up into a lather and a froth, saying he doesn't care about rights anymore or profiling or any of that. It's these dirty Muslims. He wants to get them and their little funny hats. I see him wearing their little funny hats. Angry. Rage-alluyah. So the programming seems like it is working well on both sides of the fake political divide, as well, unfortunately, on both sides of the pond. Our third and final story this week on New World Next Week, episode 312 for June 8th, 2017, is a story we've discussed time and time again here on New World Next Week. Supreme Court struck another blow against asset forfeiture abuse. Back in April, the court ruled 7-1 that Colorado can't keep fines, court costs, and other money taken from defendants if their convictions are overturned. This week, the Supreme Court issued a 8-0 ruling. Newly arrived Justice Neil Gorsuch abstained in Honeycutt v. United States, again, overwhelmingly coming down against forfeiture abuse. At issue was whether the government can force you to cough up profits from criminal activity if you never got the money in the first place. WRAL reports Justice Sonia Sotomayor said in her opinion for the High Court that forfeiture laws are limited to property the defendant himself actually acquired as the result of the crime. She cited as an example a case in which a marijuana farmer masterminds a scheme to sell pot on college campuses and recruits a college student to deliver the packages for $300 a month. In her example, the farmer might earn $3 million a year while that student's only going to get $3,600. She said under the government's theory, that student could face a forfeiture judgment for the entire conspiracy amount of $3 million. So this latest decision upholds the fundamental principle that Americans are entitled to be presumed innocent until proven otherwise, so said Robert Everett Johnson, a lawyer for a place called the Institute for Justice, a libertarian law firm. He went on to say, using civil forfeiture, law enforcement seizes billions of dollars in cash and property every year based on a suspicion of crime. Property owners are then required to prove their own innocence to get that property back. The continued existence of civil forfeiture cannot be squared with the principles upheld in April's decision. And they can't really be squared with the principles in this new decision either. If the government can't keep money you never earned from a crime it proved you did do, how can it take money when it hasn't charged you with any crime at all?
Ding, ding, ding. Bingo. Yes. I mean, that's the point, isn't it? I know some people out there will think, oh, these, you damn dirty hippie anarchists, you're just against police doing anything and whatever. No. The point is, of course, if someone is convicted of a crime and it is a crime that they have committed and they earned proceeds, money from that crime, then certainly it makes sense to take that money and, in the status system, you give it to the government, but in reality, you should restitute that money to the victims of the crime or the people that money was acquired from. Absolutely, that makes perfect sense. But to seize money that had nothing to do with a crime that you haven't even proven that this person was involved in, that is just on its face, just theft. There is no other way to put it. It's just theft. So, I mean, again, I think no one would really dispute these basic principles other than the police who get to line their pockets with this dirty, filthy lucre. So, again, this is just basic common sense. It shouldn't require the Supreme Court to step in and, oh, by the way, you know, but here we are. At any rate, this is sort of a step in the right direction. I don't think we're all the way there yet, but at any rate, something closer to what reality should potentially sort of be.
Yeah, I almost said at the beginning, this is filed pretty firmly in the not unmitigated good news file. And I'll include in the show notes, just like we include everything that we mention in these episodes down in the show notes, my archive on Media Monarchy for asset forfeiture. Not only the New World Next Week episodes where we've talked about it, but also just some news stories. James, it really hit me when you were just talking right there. Almost all three of the main stories this week are kind of Kafka-esque. And actually, I missed the opportunity. One of the cool movie theaters here in Portland last weekend was showing Orson Welles' version of Franz Kafka's The Trial film. This all kind of sounds like The Trial, unfortunately, where these gigantic bureaucratic systems, you get entrapped in them. You can't even find the way to correctly address the system to try and ask for any kind of redress. So it's just lots of levels of insanity. Fortunately, there is some actual good news. Latest episode of Good News Next Week is published on my own YouTube channel. The sharing economy is the real economy. And all this week has been something called Global Sharing Week, trying to highlight some of the ways that people are doing community-oriented things that don't involve big business and don't involve factory farming and all those things. I've also got some stories about drug war fails and some fake left funnies, and that is some of the ways that we are winning over on Good News Next Week. James, you know, all of this can only be done with people's support. And so we'll mention here again at the end, MediaMonarchy.com/support, CorbettReport.com/support. That's the place to find our PayPal, our Patreon, even post office boxes, ways to support our independent non-commercial work.
That's it. Ways that we are winning, but hopefully not reality winning. Anyway, thank you very much for three great stories. Talk to you again next week.
Thanks, buddy.